Terry Schiavo didn't make a living will, and the court battle over her end-of-life wishes has prompted many Americans to think about the need for one. In theory, living wills tell doctors what kind of care you want or don't want if you're incapacitated. But as NPR's Richard Gonzalez reports, it's not always that simple.
Sometimes a living will works out exactly as intended. That was the case with James and Mildred Walker of Southern California. Years before they died, they signed a document declaring that if they became ill and incapacitated, they did not want their lives prolonged by machines. Their daughter, Georgianne Walker, is a nurse and mother of two.
To be exact, about 14 years before either of them needed it, because above all, they did not want to be a burden to their children. That was what they told us over and over again.
Over time, Mildred Walker contracted lung cancer, and James developed Parkinson's disease with dementia.
And it became clear that somebody from the family was going to need to step in and make all of the decisions about their health care, about their finances. And I felt like I was in a good position to do all those things because I knew exactly what their wishes were. You know, my mom said to me, "Our affairs are in order."
There were no disputes when the Walkers died, largely because they had made their end-of-life wishes known and had appointed their daughter, Georgianne, to carry them out. But for many people, it isn't that simple. As doctors, lawyers, and medical ethicists point out, even a living will is not an end in itself. To begin with, what's popularly known as a living will may be called different things in different states, and only a minority of Americans, perhaps 25%, have filled one out. It's not a matter of ignorance, says Joanna Weinberg, a medical ethicist at the University of California, San Francisco.
The term living will is conceptually easy because people recognize it as, okay, it's like a will. But I think what it does is it frightens people because people are very reluctant to do wills, regular financial wills.
Generally speaking, a living will is a health care directive that tells doctors what kind of medical care you want or don't want if you become incapacitated. Another important directive is a durable power of attorney, which names someone to make your health care decisions if you can't. Sometimes the language of a living will can cause problems because it is vague. After all, what does it mean to say you don't want doctors to take heroic measures to sustain your life? Carl Schneider teaches about medicine and the law at the University of Michigan Law School. He says vague instructions can paralyze a family that is already reluctant to allow a loved one to die.
Ending treatment means ending the patient's life, and we don't want to do that until we're really sure. The living will says the patient doesn't want excessive treatment, but are we really confident we've really reached the point where we should stop and where the patient wants us to stop? Let's be careful.
Medical ethicist Joanna Weinberg at UCSF conducted a study of people who had signed living wills. She says virtually all of those surveyed had trouble remembering where they had stored their documents.
And then I would say, well, have you talked about it with your children? Oh, no, this would make them anxious. Have you talked about it with your doctor? Look, this is private information. I mean, it was very interesting that people didn't get it. You know, they had it. They knew what they wanted. Perhaps they had communicated it to a spouse, but not to other people.
Weinberg urges people to talk about their end-of-life wishes with as many loved ones as possible, especially the person designated to make health care decisions in a crisis. And that's why signing a durable power of attorney for health care is indispensable, says attorney Margaret Hand, an estate planner in Oakland.
You pick people that you trust and people that you love to make these decisions for you, and they love you too. If they need to make a decision for you, they need to hear your voice in their head, telling them what to do.
There is a certain loneliness associated with decisions to create a living will or select a proxy. Joanna Weinberg suggests that people discuss living wills in small groups, such as in their church or synagogue, but with the understanding that there is only so much people can control at the end of their lives. Richard Gonzalez, NPR News, San Francisco.